Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. When we talk about the war for the free world, we are, of course, well advised to be thinking about the context in which things like the summit meeting between Vladimir Putin and President Trump yesterday has taken place. There are few people who understand the context of Russia and before the current Russian regime's the Soviet era, and before that, for that matter, the Tsarist era before them. Then our guest in this first segment, he is David Satter. He is a journalist by trade, having served with great distinction in Moscow for the Financial Times of London and the Wall Street Journal. He is the author and movie maker of a number of very important depictions of this history of a very complex place, including most recently, The Less You Know, The Better You Sleep, Russia's Road to Terror and Dictatorship Under Yeltsin and Putin. He is hard at work at the moment on a history of the Russian system post-communism, and we look forward to that with great expectation. But in the meantime, we say welcome to David Satter, and thank you for spending a few minutes with us to talk about the summit and the context. David, welcome.
Oh, you're welcome, Frank. I'm always glad to be with you.
Well, thank you. There is a lot of gnashing of teeth at the moment, David, as I'm sure you're aware, specifically about some of the comments that President Trump made in the press conference. And really, the press conference is the only thing we have to go on, aside from a few interviews that Putin has had subsequent to the summit. But give us a flavor, as you see it, of the strategic character of what Putin is up to and how that's been manifest in this summit, not just the Sturm und Drang about Russian collusion and the like.
Well, I mean, it's a very simple answer. He and the people around him are up to staying in power and making sure that they can continue to steal the country's wealth, I mean, steal the wealth of Russia, continue to exercise unchallenged power and authority. And everything that they do, whether inside the country or outside the country, is ultimately based on this aspiration. It's not like the Soviet period where there was an ideology and that ideology animated the behavior of the leadership. Now you have simply a leadership that is intent on preserving its position at any cost, no matter how little they deserve it. And that's what we're seeing not only in the internal repression that takes place in Russia, but also in the acts of war, the invasion of East Ukraine, the seizure of Crimea, earlier the invasion of Georgia, the tensions with the United States, and even, by the way, the hacking of the Democratic National Committee and the attacks on the American electoral system. All of this conforms to the idea that the best defense is a good offense, and the outside world, and particularly the United States, insofar as we're dealing with countries that have principles, is incompatible with the kind of system that has grown up in Russia and is a threat to that system.
Yeah, and is in turn being threatened by the Russians. And as you listened to Putin yesterday, David Satter, and his sort of opening soliloquy about what had been agreed with President Trump in their private four-hour session, did you see, as I did at least, an awful lot of continuity, going back even to the Soviet era, really, between the sorts of agenda items that Putin was advancing, and that apparently, I hope this is not true, and I hope if it is true that he's going to walk it back, but apparently that was assented to by Donald Trump.
Well, we're not quite sure what was assented to, and I suppose we'll find out. But the key here is that Putin wants acquiescence in the face of Russian aggression. And that that has a dual function. It, on the one hand, really makes the world safe for further aggression. And then on the other, it affirms in the eyes of the Russian population that Putin is a leader, that he can get away with anything. And in both cases, this is not in the interest of the United States. We need to create a situation in which Putin, on the contrary, is persuaded that aggression will be counterproductive for him, and the population will understand that as a leader, he is inappropriate.
Yeah. Well, let us hope that that is the takeaway. But to some extent, I must say, and we'll talk more about this momentarily with Dr. Mark Schneider, that we're going to see some of these poison fruits, if you will, be quite seriously advanced in our country as a result of this summit. I don't know that that will be true, and I'm again hoping against hope that it won't be. But to the extent, David Satter, again, knowing what you do about what the Russians have been trying to do to use, for example, arms control as a means of garroting our military capabilities while they persist often in violation of their treaty commitments to, you know, improve their own and their interest in expanding their regional influence in the Middle East and throughout the Mediterranean and elsewhere. I mean, these are things that were pretty much, at least according to Putin, acknowledged as agenda items for further work by the two countries. And I guess I would like your sense of this is if you were to advise President Trump at this point, what would you be telling him to do?
Yeah, I mean, he's already done a lot of things that I would have advised him not to do, beginning with this summit meeting, which was completely unnecessary. You know, my position would have been that there's nothing to discuss. But the agenda items are one thing. Actually, I would like to be a little bit optimistic that once it comes to specifics, that Putin will have a harder time of it. Because his lack of good faith in the process of negotiations, when you're not in a summit setting where the object is to create the impression of goodwill, will, I think, become obvious. Trump is not completely devoid of common sense. He, after all, has, in a couple of important instances, the reaction to the Skripal attempted murder, the question of providing defensive arms to Ukraine, which is under attack by Russia. You know, the decisions were quite rational, and beyond that, they were an improvement over what we had seen in previous administrations.
David, we are hard out of time. Alas, this is a topic that we've only scratched the surface of, and I hope you'll indulge us with a further and much more detailed conversation about it all in the very near future. Next up, we will speak with Mark Schneider. We'll deep dive on the strategic issues in the summit and more right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. I am delighted to say we're joined once again by Dr. Mark Schneider. You may have heard him just yesterday talking with us about what was in the offing, it seemed, at the time with respect to President Trump's summit with Vladimir Putin of Russia. We now know, of course, at least some of what happened there, based primarily, at this point at least, on what Vladimir Putin said about it in his press conference with the president, to which the president, I think it's fair to say, did not take exception. So presumably it's an accurate report on the kinds of things that may have been set in train by the summiteers. Mark Schneider, of course, is one of our country's preeminent authorities on matters involving some of the things that were discussed, arms control, nuclear forces, missile defense, the importance of space, for example, to our missile defenses against various threats, including those emanating from Russia. Mark has a distinguished record of service to our country in both the Defense and State Departments. I had the privilege of working with him back in the Reagan administration. He went on to serve a number of other presidents and their teams in the years that followed. He was a member of the Foreign Service and served on the policy planning staff at the State Department, as well as in a variety of senior positions in the DOD. Mark Schneider, thank you again for finding a few minutes to talk with us, especially in the eve of this quite momentous summit yesterday and the press conference that followed from it. Glad to have you.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
So, Mark, again, what we're working from, at least at the moment, is the remarks of President Putin describing what took place during 4 hours of private conversation. We are given to understand the President of the United States did not have a note taker in the room, so it's a little unclear what his takeaway from all of this was. But could you characterize, at least in broad outlines, what Putin is claiming, at least, was the upshot of all of this?
Well, the Russians were clearly very pleased at the outcome of the summit meeting. Lavrov made a very glowing, Lavrov, so their foreign minister, made a very glowing, you know, assessment of what had been accomplished. In reality, we don't know an awful lot what was said by both sides. Putin, in a very summary form, both in the press conference and in the somewhat later in the day Fox News interview by Mr. Wallace, laid out essentially his agenda relating to nuclear arms control, missile defense, and arms control compliance. Actually made charges of U.S. violations, particularly in the Fox interview. It's difficult. I mean, there were no surprises there. Putin was in his relatively best behavior, but he certainly laid out enough to indicate that the Russian agenda is unchanged from what we've seen under Putin for a long time.
And arguably, Mark, what we've seen from the Soviet Union in the pre-Putin days. I mean, this is really the Kremlin's playbook for many, many years. Let's go through some of the particulars, if we can. One is there is evidently going to be some kind of working group to extend this so-called New START treaty that was negotiated by the Obama administration. Remind us, if you would, Mark, what's wrong with the New START treaty and why, under these circumstances, notably the fairly far advanced modernization of the Russian nuclear arsenal, we would be ill-advised to do such an extension.
Well, as President Trump supposedly reportedly stated last year, it's a terrible treaty. It has very little in the way of substantive limitations in it. It's got big loopholes. The notional numbers limiting warheads and delivery systems are really not real in nature, because there are too many ways to get around them under the treaty. The verification regime is very limited. It's a major walk back from what was accomplished under President Reagan and President Bush in the original START treaty. There are large elements in New START that are really not verifiable, and extending it really does very little for U.S. national security, and that's why Putin wants it. He's not interested in arms control. He sees nuclear weapons as the basis of his political power, and wants to, much like the Russians or Soviets before him, wants to avoid any serious type of arms reduction. And I think that will come out of it. my basic view is you don't go into an arms control negotiation without very serious preparations. And you've got to look at a wide range of issues, including the very important compliance issues or non-compliance issues in the case of Russia. And if you don't do that, you're not going to come out with a good outcome.
You're going to get had, I think, is the way one might put it in the vernacular. And Mark, just on this question of whether or not there have been violations by the United States of treaty obligations, what's your assessment of that?
That's nonsense. What you have is standard the standard Russian attack. They attempt to, after doing their best in the negotiations to get exactly what they want, they try to walk it back in the implementation phase. And the two references to that in the original press conference after the summit and in the Wallace interview, I think, are very much along those lines, and they're going to try make the treaty even more favorable to them than was in the original original version.
Hard to imagine. And as you mentioned yesterday, there are some weapons that were not contemplated by that treaty, the hypersonics and underwater drone submarines that are going to be a whole nother kettle of fish. I hope that in this, as in so many other areas, the president is simply going to walk these undertakings back to the extent that they were in fact made. I think the emphasis that was placed on having the National Security Council involved is our best hope of that, because I can't imagine some of this nonsense will be advanced under John Bolton and his team. But let me ask you about one other piece of this, Mark. There was reference made to the Intermediate Range Nuclear Force Treaty as well. This is one you've documented has been violated by the Russians in a number of material ways. What good can come of further negotiations on that, as you see it?
We're short of the United States literally pulling the plug on the INF treaty. Nothing is going to change with regard to Russian behavior. And I continually point out, if you follow the Russian press, clearly we're not dealing with a single cruise missile that violates the treaty. We're dealing with a whole series of missiles and the possibility of a ballistic missile as well that are blatant violations of the INF treaty. And under those circumstances, no matter how good, you could have the best negotiating team in the world negotiating these treaties, and you will still get bad outcomes no matter what you achieve in the original text of the treaty if that's not honored by the other side. And the evidence we have is very extensive violations of the existing arms control agreements. That's outlined in the 2018 Nuclear Posture Review. I believe the State Department bureaucracy is still circling the wagons around the new START treaty because they consider that the most important.
Well, look, they're going to be thrilled with this entire agenda, I have to believe. I mean, I know that there's some talk about them being upset about Ukraine, but I think in practice, nothing would make them happier than to have a new commission of academics and businessmen and others to advise on how to improve U.S.-Russian relations and this arms control agenda. To say nothing, Mark, two other ones that I wanted just to mention before we run out of time, get your thoughts on. The president is reportedly, at least again according to Putin, you know, on board with restricting our missile defenses and ensuring that there aren't any weapons placed in space, which is just a little hard to square with his enthusiastic announcement just, what was it, 2 weeks ago of a space force. What do you think is going on that front, if anything?
I think Putin is pursuing his agenda, but I don't think he will have a very much success along those lines. Certainly, the administration has been staffed by some extremely competent people in the Defense Department and the State Department, and I don't see them going along with that type of foolishness. I think except for the extreme left today, virtually everyone recognizes that missile defense is a major part of our national security posture and a major part of our ability to deter war and to protect the United States and our allies. So I don't see Putin as a particularly reliable source on what's going to happen inside the Trump administration.
Well, let's hope he's neither a reliable source nor a predictor of what's going to happen. We really do need the president to, I think, come up on the net on this and clarify what is actually going to be done, if anything, in any of these areas, because I couldn't agree with you more, Mark. Whether it's on arms control, with which the Russians have not been complying, or whether it's with respect to their modernization forces of their strategic forces, which is nigh on complete, and their INF forces, which we have no match for, or you know, the idea of restricting or precluding effective missile defenses, this would be a very serious mistake, it seems to me. Mark Schneider, thank you again for the service you continue to render to our country now, these days, at the National Institute for Public Policy, a splendid organization working in many of these areas. We appreciate you tremendously, as well as look forward to talking with you again in the near future. Next up, we'll speak with Yoram Edinger right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined by a distinguished former Israeli ambassador. He served in our country for many years. Among other things, he was charged in the Israeli mission here in Washington with the responsibility for herding the cats on Capitol Hill. He is Yoram Edinger, these days a very distinguished commentator and analyst and expert, go-to resource, really, on matters involving Middle East policy. And particularly, he has a very high degree of understanding of America's interests in the region, as well as those of his own country. Yoram Edinger, it is so good to have you with us. Welcome back, sir.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, we've been talking, not surprisingly, much today about the president's meeting yesterday with Vladimir Putin of Russia. And several of the topics, at least if Vladimir Putin is to be believed, and I'm not sure that's the case, but several of the topics in which they focused on in their 4 hours of conversation, Yoram, seemed to involve Syria, Israel, Iran. The idea that the security of Israel in particular was a shared priority, the desire to collaborate to sort out what various challenges are that we're facing. I'd be very interested in your perspective from Israel and naturally with a certain sensitivity towards Israel's security. How do you see what went down there and what might come of it?
Well, it seems to me that it's very, very premature at this stage, so swiftly following the meeting, to either rush to criticism or to praise. Certainly, one cannot assess the meeting against the backdrop of the press conference which took place afterwards, and certainly not in accordance with the role played by the 2016 election and the Russian meddling, supposedly meddling in the election. The context is much, much more complex and much dramatically wider than that. One option, which I hope is the case, is that while certainly they did refer to the Russian involvement in the 2016 election, but primarily, and I would say the vast majority of the 4 hours were devoted to much, much more critical, important issues to the future of U.S. national security, Russia's national security, and the world at large. For instance, North Korea. And there's no doubt that a top priority as far as President Trump is concerned, was to coordinate, if at all possible, to coordinate the attitude towards North Korea in order to denuclearize North Korea. Certainly, Iran played a role. And here, I venture to say, much attention was given by Russia, probably, to President Trump's presentation of the threat by the Ayatollahs in Iran to Russian national security, Russian homeland security, the domestic stability of Russia. Certainly much attention was given to the overall threat of Islamic terrorism, Shiite Islamic terrorism, Sunni Islamic terrorism, whether it emanates from Syria or from Iraq or Pakistan or Afghanistan. Russia is in the same neighborhood. Russia doesn't have the luxury of the U.S. Situated across the Mediterranean and across the Atlantic Ocean. Russia is right there in the same, almost in the same, not almost, in the same time zone.
But Yoram, let me just ask you this, because I think that you're right, of course, that it has a lot of interests. Increasingly, it has been seeking to insert itself into the Middle East, as you know so well, notably in Syria, but elsewhere as well, for the purpose of protecting those interests. That seems to me, at least by and large, to be at odds with Israel's interest, at odds with America's interests for sure, that it is aligned with Iran, that it has been enabling Iran's proxy in Syria, Bashar Assad, to not only survive the civil war, but seems increasingly to prevail in it, and otherwise to be sort of contributing to the problem that Israel is facing in Syria at the moment, rather than helping. Am I missing something here?
No, obviously, the Russian role, just like the Soviet role before the disintegration of the USSR, has been minimally adversarial role, and many times it was much worse than adversarial, actual enemy, active enemy to both and primarily to the U.S. as well as to Israel's national security. The point I was trying to make was that Probably some people would be justified to be upset about President Trump's reference to the 2016 Russian involvement in the election, but people should realize that at stake are much more important issues than to point the finger at Russia and expose Russia. And potentially, and I don't know if that was the case, but potentially, if President Trump was successful to get more coordination with Russia in face of North Korea, in face of the Ayatollahs, in face of Sunni terrorism, then I would say the price of being lenient on Russia was very, very productive price and very smart price to pay if in return you get much more so-called domesticated Russian policy and Russian military operational intelligence coordination, cooperation in the battle against that threat. The threat of Iran is not only a threat to the U.S. The threat of Iran is, I would compare it to a machete, literally as we talk, at the throat of every single pro-American Arab regime, most notably Saudi Arabia and then Bahrain and Abu Dhabi and Dubai and Kuwait and Oman and increasingly Jordan and increasingly Egypt and possibly President Trump strategized or used a tactic suggesting let's allow the Russians to benefit somewhat from a lenient attitude towards 2016, and in return let's demand more positive role in face of those clear and present and little threats.
Yeah.
Yoram, I couldn't agree more. This is one of the grave challenges of our time, alas, and very much pointed at the throat, as you say, not just of Israel, but of the region's other nations and leaders, and unfortunately, increasingly at our own. Let me ask you, speaking of threats, Yoram, Israel has been subjected in recent days not only to drones coming across the Golan Heights from Syria, whether they were Syrian or Iranian, depends, I guess, on the circumstances. But we've also had a massive bombardment from Gaza and even fire kites that have torched parts of Israel and its forests and so on. Talk a little bit about the state of affairs at the moment. I'm told that Israel has been calling up some troops. What's the state of play as you see it?
Well, I would like to comment as far as what I would like to see and not what I see at the moment. At the moment, that which I witness from my own government is far from satisfactory, because we have allowed so far Hamas terrorists basically to call the shots whenever they wish. They lob missiles at Israel whenever they wish. They burn Israeli areas, and whenever they wish, they stop and we go along. It seems to me that similar, by the way, to the U.S. attitude towards the Ayatollahs in Iran, it's time for Western democracies to preempt rather than react. We know very well that every single day that passes, the Ayatollah are getting closer and closer to either reaching the nuclear threshold or toppling some very critical pro-U.S. Arab regimes in the Middle East. We know very well that every day it goes by, Hamas terrorists in Gaza, Hezbollah terrorists in Syria and Lebanon gain more and more access to more and more lethal power. Why should Western democracies wait for a major confrontation to erupt? Why wouldn't they preempt? And I would say, in general, it's time for both the U.S. and Israel to match the tough talk with tough walk. Whenever there is a gap between the tough talk coming out of Western capitals, including Jerusalem, on one hand, and the not-so-tough walk, that plays into the hands of the bad guys. It provides tailwind to the bad guys, which means much more bloodshed on the part of the good guys.
Yoram Edgar, one of the reasons that we value so much our conversations with you from time to time is that you bring both an understanding, a command of what is afoot at the moment, but also the profound insights of history. And history could hardly be more clear on this point, that letting bad situations fester and go unaddressed only makes things worse when ultimately you have to contend with them. I appreciate your time today, sir. I hope you'll come back to us again very soon. Next up, Kevin Freeman joins us right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. It's time for our weekly visit with one of the brightest guys I know, a man whose contributions, particularly to our understanding of a facet of the war for the free world that is generally ignored or at least mishandled, and that is the economic warfare piece. And we're glad to catch up with Kevin Freeman, the author of two terrific books on the subject, Secret Weapon and Game Plan, the driving force behind globaleconomicwarfare.com, and also Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman, to discuss, among other things, what he made of this summit between President Trump and Vladimir Putin of Russia. Kevin, it's always good to talk with you, but this is a particularly important time to sort of calibrate with you on this phenomenon that there seems to be now basically universal and very vociferous hostility towards Vladimir Putin. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, maybe it's about time. Putin is certainly a problem. It's something that I've written about, something that I joined you in writing a book, Putin's Reset, The Bear Is Back, something I've written in the blog for a decade. His intention is to take down the U.S. economy and to replace it. So I think it's good that we're focusing on Vladimir Putin. What bothers me, though, is that it seems to be mostly a political move to make the president look bad. I just did a short list of things that have happened that Putin's done that just got overlooked. We had our Putin reset button in 2009 with Secretary Clinton and President Obama, which of course was a dismal failure. I think they even mislabeled it overcharge in Russian rather than reset. But and then we caught 10 spies, Anna Chapman among them, in 2009 that we've been watching them. And in 2010, we arrested them. And a week and a half later, they were shipped off to Russia. And it just was out of the media. They didn't talk about it. And Bill Clinton, about that same time, was receiving $500,000 check from a Russian bank for a Moscow speech. Then we had the hot mic moment in March of 2012, where the president of the United States told Medvedev, tell Mr. Putin that I'll have more flexibility after my election. So he was cooperating with Russians then. Then he mocked Mitt Romney in the presidential debate and said the 1980s called. They want their foreign policy back. Russia's not our enemy. And then the media mocked Mitt Romney. And then we arrested a Russian spy who was attempting to crash our stock market. For more than a decade, we've seen Russian attempts to take down our economy. And they were virtually ignored, covered up, hidden, until it was seen as a political weapon to use against President Trump.
Yeah. And it goes without saying that this not only predated, but arguably considerably surpassed in importance the so-called interference in our elections, which is not to say that it didn't happen. It's just to say that it pales by comparison. The concern, of course, Kevin, is that some of this, as you say, is simple expediency on the part of the critics. But it does seem to me, and in talking about this with several of our previous guests, there is a pretty strong, well, need for the president to claw back some of the things that were told by Vladimir Putin, who is, after all, not entirely reliable, but were told, were agreed in the course of their four-hour meeting. And I just wonder, as you look at this, Kevin, the idea particularly of having academics and businessmen and presumably other former government officials and the like stepping in to tell the United States government what it should do to improve relations with Russia seems to me to harken back to some particularly unsavory and counterproductive efforts of the past. I'm thinking of the trust, for one, you know, going back to Lenin's time of having businessmen, you know, Armand Hammer comes to mind, though he's long gone. But what are your thoughts on this, Kevin? Is it possible that should something like this be stood up, it would become a cheerleader for some very bad policies, particularly in the economic security arena?
Well, what we need to keep in mind is that economics and warfare are not separate in Vladimir Putin's mind. They're not separate in the Chinese mind. They're not separate in most parts of the world mind. Only in the United States do we draw this distinction and separate the idea that our economic policy is somehow completely different from our national security or warfare policy. And so, you know, with the trade issues going on in particular, why is it everybody's blasting Trump for trade policy that they see as a threat to our economy, and now they're blasting Trump for issues? And we've got to put the two back together, and it would be very bad policy to allow business people and structure business relationships apart from the national security threat.
Yeah, you have a wonderful turn of phrase for this, to the effect of what we consider to be business, other people consider to be a domain of warfare. And
I think that's so true, Kevin. And it is interesting, as you say, the president has been essentially making the argument to the contrary, that whether it's tariffs that are justified on the grounds of national security concerns, notably with respect to critical industries like aluminum and steel, or whether it's impeding Chinese acquisition legally, as opposed to the illegal, legally through purchasing up our, you know, software and other intellectual property, and those who are primarily doing cutting-edge innovating in that space, or other critical technologies like artificial intelligence and hypersonics and so on. And also with respect to Germany and the denunciation of Angela Merkel for doing this pipeline deal with Russia. He seemed to walk it back a little bit in the course of that press conference yesterday, but just sounds like Donald Trump's got it right. And that's what makes some of these, you know, sort of recent developments particularly troubling, as is the cynicism of and hypocrisy even of people who previously engaged in precisely these practices that they're denouncing.
I think you're right. President Trump seems to have it right in every case except for that press conference and what surrounds it. The hope is that the president has some strategy in mind that he's going to separate Russia from China, which I think is essential. Putin and China together is a serious confrontational threat to the United States. It's an existential threat, and something needs to be done. If he could separate, Russia has a big China problem if things continue down the path that they're going, and they may be aware of it. Maybe he's attempting to do that, but I gained no confidence in that approach from yesterday.
Yeah, I don't think any of us did. Kevin, there's also a question about China's economy. Seems perhaps in part as a result of this tariff confrontation, or more broadly, what the Chinese are now beginning to sense is behind it, which I think you're right, is a strategy by Trump to, I call it the Trump doctrine, to really challenge and counter what they've been doing unchallenged in the way of unrestricted warfare against us for quite some time now. But talk a little bit about what the Chinese have in mind in terms of retaliation, and whether there's reason to be concerned that they may, by going really quite directly at Donald Trump's base, affect the likelihood of him being supported in these midterm elections, or to the contrary, being harmed in a way that might translate into, oh, I don't know, the loss of the Congress, the House at least, and perhaps impeachment.
Well, there's no question China's feeling the pinch of the Trump policies. Their economy cannot be sustained long-term from a complete command and control perspective. It's not a free market economy. It doesn't make rational economic decisions. Because of that, they've been bullying and manipulating. And if you stand up to them, it's going to cause them problems. And he's done that. The president has done that, and it's beginning to cause problems. China's economy is showing signs of cooling. Now, their response is unrestricted warfare. What we see as a marketplace, our enemies view as a battle space. So they're using our political means, our institutions, investments, and so forth, and they will attempt to undermine the president in the upcoming elections. There's no doubt. I mean, people who believe that Russia interfered in the last election doubt that China might try and interfere now, and that's just ludicrous.
Yeah, stand by. It seems it's underway as we speak, as a matter of fact. Kevin, there's so much more to talk about. I look forward to doing so with you next week. Thank you for your time today and for the terrific work you do, among other things, as a senior fellow in the Center for Security Policy. And check out his work, of course, at globaleconomicwarfare.com. Two great books, Secret Weapon and Game Plan, and Coming Attractions, Kevin Freeman's Economic War Room. We'll look forward to talking with you next week. We'll hope to talk to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.